Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Well, welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have five donuts in the Gee Dunk.
Donuts.
Donut number one. This week I had the pleasure of meeting a legend at the pharmacy at Lackland Air Force Base, thanks to my banana-induced pink eye, which I actually might be getting lanced open later today, which I'll be able to keep you informed about because it's going to be fucking gross. Donut number two is wearing Spanx in your dress uniform, the greatest hack known to man. Donut number three, Kevin Mawai's speech at the Hall of Fame was amazing because he thanked his veteran dad who served 23 years in Connor's beloved army. Donut number four, the French military marches and sings beautifully, or do they? I love watching marching videos on YouTube, stumbled across these French nasty little worms. We're going to break that down. And donut number five, another weekend, several more mass shootings. We're going to talk about that as well. And all of that is going to be brought to you by our friends at Starbucks. Starbucks has sent over 3 million cups of coffee to deployed units. Woo. They have adopted over 1,000 units since March of 2019. They are doing things all over the military community that are great. They have 59 family stores, but that's going to be going up to 65 when the one in Oxnard, California opens up on September of 2019. Pretty exciting stuff. They're doing things with companies like Team Rubicon, Team Red, White, and Blue, The Mission Continues, Blue Star Families, OSD, and on and on and on. They are having store managers who have experience in the military, like former Army Chaplain Aide Ben Overturf, who is a manager at the store in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And he organized a trip of 50-plus partners and veterans to Arlington National Cemetery this year for a remembrance trip. They're doing great things all across the military community. Shout out to Starbucks. Thanks for sponsoring the show. As you guys know, I'm still on TRICARE. I think I'm the only one on the show who still uses TRICARE. You don't, right, Cons?
No, I do not. I don't really use the VA for anything.
Yeah, and I just float in a la-la land between insurances and stuff because I'm a child who doesn't understand how anything works. Okay. I haven't been to a dentist in like 5 years.
Oh, maybe you should make an appointment for one of those.
Yeah, but it's not as gross as Chaps' eye.
Yeah, true.
They don't call her Class 4 Kate for no reason. So whenever I go to the doctor, I go on base to Lackland. Last week, at the beginning of the week, my eye was completely fine. I've been having eye issues for a while. By the end of the week, this sucker looked like I legitimately got punched in the face.
You look like a prize fighter, man. You nailed it. It was all puffy. It was red. It was the grossest I've ever seen it.
It looked so swollen. It literally looked like if you sneezed, like your eyeballs would just explode out of your fucking head.
It honest to God felt like it. Like I have this thing because I think part of the reason why is that I sleep with my elbow like basically tucked inside my eye, my bicep like tucked inside my eye to block the light out. So I got this really nice sleep mask that I've been using. Well, I thought that was going to do the trick. Friday morning, I pulled off the sleep mask.
Oh, God.
And it was like somebody had just squirted me with Gorilla Glue in my eyes. Oh. And I had to like peel it off.
Yeah.
Looking in the mirror. And I was so, my wife walks in and she's like, oh, my God. She's like, if you don't go to the doctor, you're just going to have to pluck your eye out. So I bit the bullet. I normally hate going to the doctor because you have to wait forever. Even right. Like the process of seeing them. There happened to be an appointment that morning that was open, which is an unbelievable turn of events.
Miracle.
So I went to the doctor, and the first person I saw was my actual PCM. So if you've never been on a military base, sometimes you see your PCM, sometimes you don't. You could just see anybody. You see somebody who's available. You don't see the same person over and over again. Well, I get there. This dude looking at me in my face when it looks like a busted open, rotten, hard-boiled egg coming out of my eye. He says to me, I think I'm going to prescribe you Zyrtec, which is over-the-counter allergy medicine.
That's only maybe a step above, hey, or take two Motrin and call me in the morning.
Right.
I think it's a step below, dude. I mean, because at least the Motrin would allow me to have reduced inflammation and a little bit of pain.
Yeah.
Like it would take some of the pain away. So I look at him and I just go, dude, you are fucking incompetent. Like, you are, if you look at me in
my
face.
Did you say that actually to him?
Yes. I was like, go for I was so pissed, dude. I've been dealing with this issue, you guys know, for 6 months, man.
Yes.
6 months I've been dealing with this issue.
Right.
And to tell me Zyrtec, like, I'm so stupid that I haven't gone and be like, let me try an allergy medicine.
Right.
Yeah, dude,
right.
I've tried Singular, Aguilar, any type, Zyrtec, anything that was available. So I looked at him, I was like, you're obviously incompetent. Go find me your supervisor. I'm not speaking to you anymore.
Wow. What did he say?
He was like, well, we can work through this. What are some of the other issues? I was like, nope, go find your supervisor. I'll wait.
Yeah.
And so I just sat down on the bed and just waited. I mean, they made me wait like 50 minutes to an hour on the crinkle sheets. And I knew it was going to happen. I think I texted you guys in the moment. Yep. I'm going to be sitting here for a while.
Yep.
Now.
Yeah.
Well, the guy comes in, the supervisor comes in, and he was a lieutenant colonel. And he comes in and he looks at my face and he's like, you recommended Zyrtec for that? And the PA goes, yeah, I did. And he just looks at him like, what are you doing, man? Like, he was like, obviously, he's probably in some pain. If you look at it, look how sensitive it looks. He's like, we're going to go ahead and put you on a round of antibiotics. And I said, I'm very irresponsible with stuff like medicine. Can you just give me a shot? He's like, you're a sicko, man. He's like, how could you wait this long to come in for this eye and then you want a shot instead of pills? It's like, I just wanted to get it over with. So he sent me upstairs to the ophthalmologist, and they are looking at me, and the lady that works at the eye clinic cannot make eye contact with me. It's like one of those people where she's just grossed out by looking at my face.
We're on Skype right now, and I'm looking at your shirt instead of your eyes. I'll be honest.
Yeah. I don't blame you at all.
Right.
But she says to me, it's at 10 o'clock. I know that there's ophthalmologists all back there. There's only one person in the waiting room. And I was like, look, I'm obviously in a lot of pain. I just went down. They put me on some antibiotics. Can I see a doctor today? Like, I'll wait. If somebody doesn't show up, they're like, no. And you're not allowed to wait in our room. I was
very cruel. Talk, man. Very cruel.
Yeah. So I'm going back today, and I'm just going to tell them. It's going to be like the scene in Rocky where I'm just going to say, cut me
Mick.
Just fucking cut me.
Well, selfishly, please do that live on Instagram Live or something like that. So I'm not going
to
watch, but...
And you would think the entire situation would be negative, like knowing how bad my eye hurts, I'm not getting quality care. I go downstairs, I'm fuming mad. I have to pick up. I did get the Zyrtec, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
I needed some more, and it's free, so why not pick it up instead of spending like $25 on it? So I go downstairs and I see this little dude that's coming through with his little cart, and he's tiny. He's probably 5'2", 5'3". And he's kind of hunched over. He's obviously very old. And he's wearing his hat, like the veteran's hat that we've talked about so many times. And on it, it says World War II. And then underneath that, it says Korean War. And I'm like, oh, fuck, yes. I love talking to these dudes.
Yeah.
So I go up to him at first while he's waiting in line and just shake his hand and say, thanks for your service. I appreciate what you did. Well, he comes back and he sits kind of adjacent next to me on the little stool. And I was like, hey, do you mind if we have a conversation while we both wait? It's like, no. I was like, can you tell me about some of your experiences that you've gone through and where did you serve? And his face kind of like lit up.
Right.
To sit there and talk. He was 94 years old. His name is Lieutenant Colonel George San Miguel. And Lieutenant Colonel George San Miguel spent his first tour in World War II in the European theater. And he didn't really want to talk about that too much. He said, I didn't really do a whole lot. I feel like there's a lot of people who did other things than me. He's like, but I'm willing to tell you about my stories in Korea because I did two tours in Korea. So he went and he actually served with the Turkish army that was there in the Korean War. And he told me about some of the experiences, and I looked it up, and here's what some historians have said about where he was at. He said it's the coldest weather that had been there in 40 years gripped the land. It numbed and miserable soldiers tried to keep warm around makeshift fires made in empty 50-gallon drums. Medical units began treating their first cases of frostbite. More and more, Korea became the proverbial hell froze over. It was necessary to mix alcohol with gasoline to prevent gas lines from freezing in the vehicles and equipment. Blood plasma had to be heated for 90 minutes before it could be used. Medicines that were water-soluble froze, and sweat that accumulated in the soldiers' boots froze the night before. The U.S. Army's 7th Division and other units were not prepared for the Arctic warfare. Few of the fighting units had Arctic parkas, yet they were ordered forward, and on November 21st, they were ordered to move across the riverbed containing what they had been told would be only ankle-deep water that would present no problem at all. The night before, however, upstream dams had been opened and the water released. The soldiers waded into frigid, waist-deep water with chunks of ice floating in it. After several unsuccessful attempts, the crossing was called off, 18 men suffered frostbite, and they had to have their uniforms cut off of them. Over the course of that battle of where he was actually at, there was 3,514 casualties, of which 741 were killed in action, 2,068 were wounded, 163 missing, 244 were taken prisoners, as well as 298 non-combatant casualties. So he told me that after he did his first tour with the Turkish folks, that he came back. He had only been back for 3 weeks before they recalled him, and he started his second tour over there again. He said, my bones started. It was the first time that I felt like my bones were thawed, and then they called me back that I had to go again.
Wow.
He said that whenever he was there, that they would fly or they would go on these boats to get back over to Korea. And he said that him and a lot of the other people that were there with him when they were going back, they zipped up their sleeping bags at night and cried inside their sleeping bags because they were so scared about what they were about to have to do again, but they didn't want to let their country down.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And I think Korea, as a conflict that we've been involved in, is often forgotten about. Obviously, there's been many movies and books written about World War I, World War II, Vietnam, and then sandwiched in between is Korea, and it's just not talked about enough, and how brave these gentlemen were and the conditions that were just completely inhumane. Like, you talk about wading into frigid water. Just think about, like, when you go in the ocean in the summer, maybe earlier in, like, June, and it's kind of still cold, and you kind of, like, walk slowly, and then you get up to your waist, and the waves come, you, like, jump up a little because you don't want it to touch you because it's cold. Yeah. Now just imagine that's, I don't know, 40, 50 degrees colder.
How do you keep morale going? That's my great uncle was in the Frozen Chosen in the Marine Corps, and his basement was like a library to the Korean War. Really interesting stuff, but very, very interesting going through it. But that's, if you're a youngin in the VA and you're in the waiting room and you see somebody like that, like you said, his face lit up. And it's important for people to tell their stories. So I love that you took the time to chat this gentleman up, and what an incredible story came out of it too. So very cool.
Well, I asked him, because I know people listening, like, well, why don't you have him on the show? He was absolutely not into it at all.
Yeah.
After he told me about it, I was like, look, I actually host this show. We talk about military issues. We've had some World War II veterans on before. I'd love to have you on the show. He's like, absolutely not. I don't want to pat myself on the back at all.
Yep, so. but very cool.
I'm sure not a lot of people will just approach him. I don't know if he mentioned if he has much family, but I'm sure they've heard the stories by now if he does. So those stories, he's just sitting on them. He doesn't get a chance to tell them ever. No one ever asks him. So I can only imagine how excited he was to talk to you. He probably would have talked to you for hours.
Invited me to go out. I've told you guys in the chat, but he goes to Cracker Barrel and has every single Tuesday since like the 1980s or something like that.
Love that.
And whenever he retired, he started going to Cracker Barrel on Tuesdays and eats biscuits. And he was like, a lot of times I just go by myself and hang out and I eat a big breakfast and chill. And he told me he'd be there 11 o'clock just like he normally is. So I think I'm going to go visit him tomorrow and go eat some biscuits.
I love the picture of you guys sitting on the rocking chairs out front with your busted ass eyeball.
Are you going to be able to see him? Are you going to be able to pick him out of the crowd?
I think we'll both be going through our own issues. He has a hearing problem and I have an eye issue. We're almost the same age. We're
basically.
Barely under 60 years apart.
Speaking of Korea, have you guys ever seen the Korean War Memorial in Washington, D.C.? I think it's one of the cooler ones that is in Washington.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. So if you've never seen that one, search it out next time you're in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. I mean, most of the stories that come out of Korea are how cold it is and things like that. And I don't think that we could really put into perspective how cold it is. It's so cold that they used to have to take their rifles and shoot their MRE cans, because it was just cans at the time, and pick up the chunks and put it in their cheek in order to get the nutrients from the frozen MRE.
Crazy.
That reminds me of, real quick though, not to make light of it, but the Dane Cook stand up when he's talking about having a really bad day and he calls his parents and his dad gets on the phone. He's like, what are you crying? What's wrong? He's like, I had a bad day. He's like, really? I was in Korea. I had a bad life.
Right. Yeah. Like, you can't compare.
That's so true.
Yeah.
So true. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, for this second donut here, this little topic came about when we posted Saturdays are for the boots, because that is the day that all the boots hit the town. They're wearing their cowboy hats and their dog tags outside their shirts and all their wacky stuff. And you can pick a boot out in town, and a boot's like a brand new soldier or airman or marine, whatever, because they're just, they got all the camo gear on, they got the backpack, but you can see one from a mile away out in town, and you know they're real excited. They've just been stuck at boot camp at MOS school, and they're finally out on leave, like, for the weekend, they're free. And they make a lot of poor life choices. But that, so I posted on Twitter, we posted Saturdays for the boots, and I posted my own boot pictures mm-hmm. from when I just had one little National Defense ribbon, and there was a uniform inspection that we had where in boot camp, I've talked about this before, but I went into boot camp around 160 and I left at about like 118. I lost so much, wow. an incredible amount. You could see my ribs. I went down to a size zero. Right now I'm like an 8.
Wait,
I went down.
Really?
Yep.
I
went down.
I wouldn't have
guessed that. Yep. I went down to a size zero. It's my, you get it. I'm dragging a wagon. but I, so basically as soon as I was out of boot camp and I was at MOS school where you could eat whatever you wanted finally again. Mm. Because I'm such a slow eater. You guys know what a slow eater I am. That's yes. why I lost so much weight. But
yeah,
it was
I was going to say, I don't want the listener to think that it's because of the things that you're doing. It's just because you're the slowest eater in the history of the world.
And even screaming drill instructors couldn't speed me up. I just have always eaten slow, and I lost so, so, so much weight. And also, I had been drinking a ton of beer before I joined, and I wasn't doing that anymore, and I lost a little pounds.
And a lot of it is because, Kate, you have how many chews do you have to do? Do you do 30 or 60?
It was 26, and then it was, yeah, and then it was higher than that, and then I brought it down to 26. I think a little OCD action going on.
So
anyway.
One time, Kate, I have to tell this part, too, to give people an idea. It's everything. Yep. Whenever we were sitting at a hotel one time and sitting in, like, a continental breakfast, I was like, Kate, are you fucking chewing oatmeal? She's
yep.
like, yeah.
I got to chew everything. I don't know what it is. Everything has to get, like,
Wait,
super chewed.
Do you chew your ice cream?
I like sift it through my mouth. It's weird. It's a weird. And if there's chunks, yes, I like. But anyway, so yes, I lost a shitload of weight at boot camp because they were treating me fine, but I'm just like a weird person. But anyway, so I got back out to MOS school, and nobody in my free time, I had all these cravings that I was finally able to fill, and the biggest one was Oreos dunked in peanut butter.
Sure.
I would sit in my room at night after we were done training for the day and swear to God, eat an entire fucking, like, not just one sleeve. Both sleeves and an entire jar of peanut butter. And this
chunky
was like,
or smooth?
Smooth, of course. Okay. But this was like almost
can't
every
chunky cons.
No.
You can do it through all things. Through God, all things are possible.
But long story short, I couldn't stop. And I had also discovered cottage cheese for the first time in my life.
Really?
I was putting it on breakfast, lunch, dinner. I was putting it on everything. So I was just housing cottage cheese and Oreos and peanut butter.
Oh,
so
God.
I gained. I know. So I went from a size zero. All of a sudden, I was a size 6.
That's
and
a big
we
jump.
Had a uniform inspection, but I hadn't gotten my uniforms let out. So I was a size 6 in a size 0 uniform, Charlie's. And we got called out, and we line up outside, and I am like, I'm like afraid to move.
But walk them through whenever you actually were done, like whenever you're looking inside the mirror at your wall locker, are you
I knew. I couldn't stand up straight. I was stuck at this like slight bend, this slight curl. Yeah. I was like, oh shit. And my buttons were literally vertical. They were like at a 90 degree. So like instead of being flat, they were pointing
at
you.
Yeah.
Like every single button. My pants, they were so, you know, when the crotch is like super and the pockets are out.
Yes.
There was nothing I could do. I was like, oh, fuck.
Pocket pussies is what we call
them.
Yeah,
they were pocket pussies.
No, I actually never heard that term, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
I had three big old pocket pussies going on. So I go out and I'm like, lined, and I try and fit in. And my staff sergeant, who is like, he was the best, but he was like a total fucking dick. And I'm like, oh, God, here he comes. And he just stops in his tracks. He's like, what the ever-loving fuck is this shit? He's like pointing me out. And he's like, no, go back to you. Like, he kicked me out of the formation. I was like, go back to your room right now. No one should ever see a United States Marine like this. Yeah. You look like you're about to explode. And he said that the biggest danger is that my buttons
take her down to the dejuicing room.
Yeah, take me to the roll. They rolled me. Three little men came out. And they rolled me back into the. But he said
what
that my buttons.
Is it like getting terribly fat?
Filling out your Charlie's. But anyway, yes. So he said that my buttons were going to take out somebody's eye. He's like, you're going to
explode. I mean, that's a genuine concern.
So It was like one of the most embarrassing. And when I got back to my room, he was like, you just go back up there and wait. And see, I had to keep the uniform on. And then he came back up again and just.
And you can't sit because it's making it even worse. You just have to stand there.
Oh, yeah. And so there's a picture that I put. You can see it on my Twitter, but you can tell like I'm about to explode. And I had my roommate take a picture of me when she got back up to the room. I was like, I don't know, just because. And you can see how my body is literally like curled up and bent in this super tight uniform.
Was this the staff sergeant that kicked you out? Was he the same one that had to come rescue you when you popped your eardrum in
yes,
the pool?
Yes, swear to God, same one.
So this guy hated
same
you.
Same guy, absolutely. He was like, what the fuck? I like wrote him a poem at the end of MOS school. I was like, I wrote you a poem because it was such a neat time. And he was like, get the fuck out of my office. Like, I just could not. Anyway.
Wait, what? You wrote a poem?
I feel like she's told that before.
Yeah.
I think she's told that before.
I wrote a poem at the end of boot camp for my platoon for Papa Company. And then I wrote a poem at the end of MOS school. I've always been creative. And I'm like, here's a little story documenting all our time together. For the whole squad. It wasn't like just for my staff sergeant. It was like wacky. It was like we had this staff sergeant fall asleep on a bridge because he was like a FAP. He was like infantry. They got fat. He fell asleep sitting on a bridge at one of our ops and he fell backwards off the bridge like sleep.
Oh, Humpty Dumpty head
yeah,
ass.
So I would document these things in little. Anyway, whatever. So long story short, I posted that picture of myself and how tight the uniform was. And this guy at Lane JT said, my buddy bought Spanx for a uniform inspection when he knew he got slightly too fat for his Charlies, and it was the greatest flex I ever did see. How did it never occur to me? Spanx.
I don't know that they existed back then.
I honestly want to get some Spanx right now.
So yeah,
like whenever
brilliant.
I read that, I thought about, nobody would really know if I was wearing Spanx. Like if I came up to the office next time and I'm wearing Spanx, people would be like, oh, whoa, Chaz, you've been working out.
Right. Nobody would ever know. I am assuming there's got to be other people because then other guys started to comment and be like, yeah, I got to admit, like two uniform inspections ago, I put on two pairs of extra small Under Armour and that's how I got through the inspection. Like people, that's brilliant. I never thought of like utilizing other stuff to pass.
Dude, you could even go further and get like an actual girder.
Right. Girdle. You could get like the Kim Kardashian waist trainer. Like
school, right. Old school.
All right, now we're out here. Grab that Marine right in front of you right damn now. Tighten up his damn girdle.
Yeah, tighten up. They're just all tightening up the strings and everything. But I just thought, I wish I had thought of that back then. And I bet you money out there, there's plenty of gentlemen and ladies who
probably
are saran wrapping themselves and putting double Under Armour and Spanx to fit into their uniforms for inspection.
And I actually just checked. Spanx was founded in 2000, so they definitely were around.
I could have done
corrected.
It. So I could have passed that uniform inspection, but
God, I can't even imagine what I would have done if I was going through and I found a male Marine wearing goddamn Spanx.
Well, that's the problem, Chaps. So you do it, you use it, you look great, but God forbid somebody finds out that you're wearing Spanx.
Right.
I think that's the problem.
The worst part's taking a pee in those things, let me tell you.
Wait, but is it a full body thing? Like, how does it work?
It wouldn't be against the uniform regulation to do it. I think that wearing Spanx in a Charlie inspection or in any type of uniform inspection is essentially like shooting underhanded free throws. You know, like by and large, the research shows that you will make more of your free throws if you shoot underhanded than if you shoot overhanded. It's just the look that you don't want to have.
Right.
Who's going to be that first brave one? Who is going to be, who was it? The Dunleavys? Right? That shot underhand?
Underhand?
No.
The Barrys.
No, yeah, the Barrys. Rick Barry.
The Barrys,
the
yeah.
There you go. Well, if you're out there wearing Spanx, power to you. Hope you don't get caught, but
if you're wearing Spanx, let us know.
Yeah.
Send us a picture, and if you're wearing Spanx in a uniform, send us a picture, and we will post it and keep your face out of it.
Yes, yeah. Thomas. I need to know what this looks like.
Great flex, though.
All right, let's move on. And if you are going to wear those Spanx, you might as well put some swipes in your back pocket, too, because nothing gets the ladies and gentlemen flowing sexually like a nice little military uniform. Swipes are clinically proven to last longer in bed. They're effective and easy to use and fast action and don't require a prescription. Roman swipes can just help you out in the bedroom a lot. They're not going to transfer to your partner, and you can last longer without worrying. They come in an unmarked package, and each swipe packet is small enough to fit in your wallet, which Kate needs to get. Kate, that really does bother me that you just have free-flowing keys and cards everywhere.
That's right? Ridiculous, Catherine.
Look at this.
That's ridiculous.
Right here. You know why I lost my
Hold on, let's see. There's a fiver. There's a Metro card. There's a credit card.
This five's so broken, I can't use it.
Okay.
I actually lost my debit card again, so I can't get cash out. So my laundry's being held hostage at the laundromat right now because they only take cash.
Wow.
So I was going to ask you, Cons, can I borrow 50 and I'll Venmo you so I can get my clothes back? I'm on the last legs. I've worn these
I mean, that T-shirt is something that you're wearing. That's like a freebie you get at a freaking a walk or a 5K.
I'm literally down to my last pair of underwear. Somebody please help me. My Venmo is open. The way I live my life just kills chaps, dude.
It really does.
I don't know how you do it a lot of times with a lot of the things that you do. I just don't know how you exist.
Buddy, me neither.
Because if you had a wallet, you could throw in a Roman swipe in there and be set on your way.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't have Romans in your loose back pocket like Kate does, go to GetRoman.com/zero and you get, for just $5 on your first month, you can get it with a monthly plan. So go to GetRoman.com/zero. That's GetRoman.com/zero.
You know what's harder than keeping all your stuff together when you don't have a wallet?
What?
Your dick when you swipe with Roman.
Okay.
Okay. Your meaty cock.
Throbbing member.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a poem about this episode.
Haters going to hate.
All right, let's move on. It was the NFL Hall of Fame weekend this weekend, which I don't really care about. I mean, no. I guess if somebody from my team was going into it, but the speeches are going to be the same. Most of the time, the speeches are the exact same. Like, I want to thank all my coaches, my parents, blah, blah, blah. But Kevin Mawai, he actually didn't get a lot of attention because he's an offensive lineman. Offensive lineman at the Hall of Fame, I just feel so bad for them because, like, the average fan, you don't pay attention to the big uglies down front. Mm-mm. You just don't.
But he was certainly a name, I don't know, maybe because he played for the Jets and growing up around here. Like, I always knew who he was.
Yeah, I'm a Jets fan. Kevin Mawai's a legend.
Yeah, he's definitely a legend.
Probably our best overall player outside of Curtis Martin over the last 20 years.
Well, that's not hard for the Jets. Anyways.
Yeah, so, you just offensive linemen don't get as much attention as just
correct.
The fact. They just
correct.
Don't. But Kevin Mawai gave a speech about his dad, who ended up serving 23 years. I want people to listen to it because the sentiment is very touching.
My dad was a career soldier in the U.S. Army, serving 23 years. During his career, he served two tours in Vietnam, one stint in Korea, two tours in Germany. Dad, I watched you take pride in putting on your uniform and packing your rucksack and taking care of your helicopters. You never cut corners and you never looked unprepared. You taught me that if it's worth doing, to do it right the first time and don't half-ass anything. You taught me to take responsibility for myself, don't blame others, and if you aren't going to do anything about it, then don't complain about it. You taught me to never start the fight, but you taught me I better damn well finish it. You taught me the value of walking lightly and carrying a big stick, and those lessons are great lessons that I still hold values in my life today. Dad, I love you, I thank you. More than all of that, you're the greatest lesson and the greatest person that I could have had. But Lord, Dad, the biggest thing you taught me was family. You taught me how to love your family. You taught me how to love my wife and to love my children. You're the greatest example of how it is to be a man that I could have ever asked for. Whether I stood on this stage tonight or not, just know this, I'm proud to be your son. Mom, you were tough and you demanded the best out of us. I can't count the number of times we had to refold our clothes because every drawer was messy. As a kid, you got in trouble if the sheets were crumpled under the covers and we had to remake the beds countless times. If we ever feared Dad when we got in trouble, we didn't have to worry about it because the punishment couldn't be half as bad as the one you doled out before he got home. Respect and obedience was the expectation. You didn't let us off the hook, and I'm a better man for it.
That's got to be the ideal moment for you as a parent, mm-hmm, I think.
Yeah.
Is your kid has done so well that they're getting honored to go in something like the Hall of Fame, and they credit you to how you parented. Like, because me as a parent, when I look at my kids, I always wonder what they're going to say about my parenting style whenever I'm older. I know what I think about my parents and how they did things and how I've done things differently than them. Hearing that in front of a stage of the world, and that not only that your son was thankful for your service, but how you went about and you were an example of hard work and things like that. You could tell that his dad, if you see the video, was absolutely welling up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I'd be. I'd be in a full-blown weep mode.
I think like the common misconception when you grow up in a military family, if you're not in a military family, you know nothing about it, everyone thinks it's like super strict and the parent is yelling all the time and it's discipline this and that. And you got the impression, and you saw it firsthand with his speech, that he just taught him a lot of strong life lessons that he learned in the military and then he passed on to his children, and just how beneficial that was because it ultimately led to him being in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right about that perception, and that's not the case at all. I think every now and then that's it, but by and large, tons of wonderful parents in the military. Mm-hmm. Most, I'd say most. And also, Chaps, I want to say someday I can see your daughters giving speeches about you like that when they are award-winning ophthalmologists. They're like, well, we were inspired by our own father. Who's I?
Whenever we looked at him, we said, nobody should suffer like my daddy.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
When I came downstairs and I asked him, do you like my outfit today? And he said, honey, I can't see you because of my banana-induced pink eye. I knew right then I wanted to be an ophthalmologist.
Yes.
I can't ask Kate or myself this question because we don't have children, so I'll ask you, Chaps. I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Very rude to Kate's plants.
Oh, yeah,
thank
sorry.
You. Wow. Oh, and I could have awkward. Kids out there for all I know. You
that's
don't
also
know.
True. You don't know.
Yeah.
Hard sneeze. One comes rolling out. You don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, Chaps, what do you think right now is one lesson that you've taught your children that you hope years from now down the line they say, I remember that lesson and it's something I kept with me for the rest of my life?
I think kindness to other people. Yeah. I think that we try to teach them to be kind no matter what race, color, creed, religion, anything like that. We talk about that all the time and really instill those values, and we see it already taking fruit in our kids. I was whenever we had Kelsey's birthday party last year, she had a pool party. And I told one of our friends that was there, one of the dads, I was like, look at Kelsey's friend group. I was like, it looks like somebody was trying to take a picture of that could not be roasted in any way for leaving out any race. Like, it was everybody. So like, she had some Filipino kids there, some black kids, some Mexican kids, some white kids. There's redheads, dark hair, everybody, like everyone was represented. And I was like, man, she's like really living this life that you hope to see your kids do, like that mm-hmm. they don't take any race or things like that into consideration. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think that's so important to grow up and have that diversity throughout your formidable years, because so often you see people that grow up in various parts of the country and it's through no fault of their own. It's just the way that the demographics work out, but they're just not as well adjusted to deal with other types of people.
Yeah.
And it's just really disheartening to see. So that's very great to hear that she's got such a diverse group of friends already.
And honestly, I just think she just wants any friends that she could possibly have. She is like friend obsessed.
Yeah, I feel
like
that.
She is she's constantly texting, constantly talking on the phone. It's like, we get it. You have some friends now. And she'll talk to them loud. So we know that she's talking. Like, we get it. You got friends.
I do the same thing on the subway. Hey, everybody. Oh, I'm going to this cool club this week. I'm going to go home and water my plants.
All right, before we get into this next topic, I want to talk a little bit about Rob Rodney, because I think it was one of my all-time favorite big brain pitches. Rob Rodney is a storage bag for cannabis. It's made out of leather. It's really stylish. The interior is customizable. So there's a place for all your goods, pens, vaporizers, edibles, joints, you name it. It even has airtight jars to keep your goods safe. But the best part is the lock. It's a TSA-approved combo lock to keep everyone out, kids, dogs, nosy roommates. It's all about the peace of mind that you need to enjoy your cannabis, but enjoy it responsibly. It comes in black or brown in two sizes, big for the cannabis connoisseur, small one for just the person who dabbles. But here's why I'm really getting behind these folks, because Rob Rodney has teamed up with the Veteran Cannabis Project, a nonprofit started by a Navy SEAL who is trying to shift the mindset of policymakers to consider cannabis as a way to improve the quality of life for veterans. For the month of July, Rob Rodney will donate 5% of its sales to support this great cause. Bags start at just $99, and they're giving ZBT listeners a 10% discount with ZBT10 at robrodney.com/ZBT.
I gotta say, as a lady who dabbles, I got a Rob Rodney bag, and it is, not only is it like a beaut, it's the nicest bag I own as a lady who's normally a mess with my wallet and all that stuff. It's a beautiful bag, and it locks. You can lock that sucker, so if you have a little something in there, you're good.
Sometimes whenever I'm just bored, I'm sitting away. My wife was gone this weekend, and I was just sitting around watching YouTube. I'll go to and watch old marching videos just because I'm weird like that. I like that kind of stuff. I came across these French fellas, and they are marching, and it's a very different style. Because even though the Army and the Marine Corps and the Air Force and the Navy, we all march different. You have like your different things that you do. But nobody in American Armed Forces sings to me. Listen to the French folks sing to you. Initial reaction, do you like it, Cons?
Yeah, it was very nice because you said our military has a style that is kind of rough and tough and hard, where this was more melodic and it was
French.
Nice on the ears and French. Yeah, I guess that's the best way to describe it. It was very French.
Yeah, and this, the thing says, this was posted in 2009. It has over 500,000 views now, and it says, these are French Marines singing Polynesian songs from the islands while they're marching to their weekly instructions, filmed at Afghanistan Kabul on the Kabul International Airport during an ISAF mission. And somebody else commented, trained with and fought besides the French Legion and Marines, absolutely fantastic soldiers and always great at singing. Like, apparently that's their thing, but that they were all on harmony, they all sounded good. We never sounded good.
No.
I mean,
because we weren't allowed to sing. Marines aren't allowed to sing. Like, you have to scream. Even like the national anthem and shit like that. You weren't allowed to sing it.
That was delightful, though. And I can see if you're stuck having to march a long way in the hot sun, just having some kind of slow, melodic, like just something to keep your mind on, to keep your mind off. I really liked that.
I liked it. It was very nice.
Yeah. I thought it was lovely as well. I don't want to like it, but I kind of do like it. I think that it's. But if you're, it's not intimidating. We have to admit that.
Exactly.
Too. That's not an intimidating way to go.
It's very soft. It's very soft.
Yeah. I still liked it, though. And also, that reminded me, just looking at militaries from other countries, somebody tagged me in a thread this weekend, and it started with a U.S. soldier who was like, finest people, finest looking people in the military, show yourselves. Mm-hmm. And thousands of responses. Mm-hmm. But it was like a UN, it was like boots of the UN unite, like
right.
Boots from every country. It was like the guy in Ghana with the BFA, like, hey, there's people from like Asia,
Jumbo.
There's like people from all around the world. Militaries all around the world responded, and then they were all commenting on each other's stuff and liking each other. It was like the Buddhist thing ever, but it was the sweetest thing ever. And
that,
it's
that
so,
warmed your little heart, didn't
and,
it?
Yeah, and it's so cool to see that, like, no matter what military around the world, there's some commonalities no matter right. what. Even if there are enemy, there are boots in every military. There are super hottie boomalotties in every military. Mm-hmm. Every military has the people taking the selfies in the mirror, thinking they look cool as shit. Like, any continent, everywhere. It was just like a really fun thread to go through.
But I want to read the Bulgarian version of Terminal Lance.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
That's what I always wonder, like North Korea, even there, like, are they allowed to be?
It might be a step too far there, Catherine. Maybe not North Korea.
Yeah, they're not
anytime
sending dick pics.
Anytime you're at risk of getting strapped to a rocket. Well, unless, I mean, shout out to Doris. Anytime you're.
Yeah, oh boy. Call back.
Oh gosh, love Doris.
Last subject of the day, we wanted to talk about what happened over this past weekend. So Kate, why don't you do a quick recap?
Sure. Over less than 13 hours and nearly 1,600 miles apart, two mass shootings this weekend left 29 dead at least and 53 injured, and the country is reeling from more gruesome scenes of violence and death. On Saturday morning, a gunman opened fire into a crowd at an El Paso, Texas Walmart, a retail area popular among local residents and shoppers from just across the southern border with Mexico. Then early Sunday, a shooter attacked a crowd outside a popular bar in Dayton, Ohio, as patrons were just trying to enjoy a night out. One suspect is in custody in the El Paso case. Federal prosecutors were treating it as a domestic terrorism case. In Dayton, responding officers killed the gunman, police said. Both attacks follow a week in which Gilroy, California's Garlic Festival, Brooklyn, New York, and Philadelphia were all struck by gun violence, not to mention 48 people shot in Chicago this past weekend with five killed. Among those killed in the El Paso shooting, I'd be remiss not to mention, because this shooter had a manifesto that very publicly came out, and he drove 9 hours south to the border to make sure the shooting took place here. It's racism, it's terrorism. And among those killed, U.S. Army veteran Arturo, I'm going to get his last
name, Benavidez.
And he was known as just a local. He drove a bus in the local community. He was well-loved by everybody. So this fucking coward coming down thinking with his manifesto and looking out for is killing U.S. Army veteran. The parents of small children who died protecting their children. I mean, it just doesn't get more cowardly and terrible than that. And I'm just and the Dayton shooting, three active duty airmen from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base sustained injuries as well while they were trying to evacuate that scene. And I also saw on Twitter someone who was deployed, somebody I followed in the veteran Twitter community for a minute, wondering from Fort Bliss, which was right near the El Paso shooting. Boy, I hope my wife and kid are OK. So he's deployed and he's worried about his kids back home if they're OK because of shootings here in the U.S. It's just this weekend, man, it's just like a dark shadow kind of. Well, I think for everybody has been rolled over. It's just, when are we going to hit the point? I don't know.
Yeah. And it's frustrating to talk about. And like, that's why we don't really get into the weeds, because it feels like you are just paddling upstream. You're swimming upstream and not going anywhere and continuing to go backwards with this type of shit. And it's ridiculous, man. Like, Sunday morning, I went to Walmart to pick up a basketball hoop for my daughter. And they're outside of the Walmart on 1604 in Calabria here in San Antonio. There was a group of people that were gathered around and they were huddled together praying, like outside of a Walmart. And just think about how strange that is. Mm. Like that you have to go to a Walmart to pray for people because of what happened at another Walmart. Like the idea that we've gotten to that point where that's normal in America is baffling. And like you're a little bit nervous. Like even though you shouldn't be, you know, like odds are that day 40 million people shopped at Walmart and nothing happened. That's still not an excuse. Like right. It should never happen in right. America. We should never have that happen. And it's happening all the time.
Yeah,
all
and you're the time. Right. I think the thing that is just so, so sad to see, for me at least, and just gets me so annoyed, is the discourse that's happening, you know, on social media or whatever. And it's just people still want to be right, whether it's right or left. It's like, oh, it's a, you know, don't take my guns, take their guns. And it's just these people who are just being mean to one another, right? And that doesn't accomplish anything. Being on the right side of this issue, meaning the correct side, like, oh, see, we were right. Like, who cares? I don't care who's right or wrong anymore. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat. And that's the problem. It turns into this political discussion. And I understand it is a hot button political issue.
It is so political.
No, it is political, because I think ultimately what has to happen is, you know, some sort of new legislation has to come through. But it just seems like it's a case where people are more concerned that, oh, we're correct and you're wrong and I'm going to tell you why you're stupid and I'm smart. But that doesn't accomplish anything. That doesn't prevent these shootings from happening. And it's unbelievable to me when you look at the statistics and the numbers that people can still just not seemingly do anything about it. And I understand this is not one of those situations where you snap your fingers and all of a sudden, boom, we eradicate mass shootings. It is a cultural problem. It is a political problem. There are a lot of things that need to happen, but I would just love to see the fighting among the two groups in this country to just cease and come together on this issue to find the common ground, to find a solution.
Well, that sounds nice, and I think the outrage is necessary, and it's needed, and the rage and the anger is necessary, and the loud voices and the screaming is necessary, because people at the top are just not doing shit about it.
No, I'm not saying you can't be angry, because I'm angry.
No, I know, but you're right. The discourse on it sucks, but ultimately, I'm sorry, if you think that nothing needs to change, you're fucking wrong. Like, I don't care. I'll say it to your face. Like, you are just fucking wrong. Something, huge things need to change. Gun control, absolutely, 100%. I saw a veteran I know on Twitter the other day post a picture of his AK the day after the El Paso shooting and saying, I bet this is going to trigger some snowflakes out there. Fuck you. You inconsiderate piece of
shit. That's what, like, I'm talking about. That's the type of thing I'm talking about. Like, oh, look, I'm on the right. I'm correct.
Right.
And you're wrong. And me having a gun doesn't change anything. It's like, no, dude, doing stuff like that is not a good idea. Trying to get snowflake, quote unquote, snowflakes triggered doesn't help.
It's crazy.
You know what's even worse than that? It went. I don't know if you guys saw it on Twitter whenever it happened. There was people all throughout Texas who were doing the stupid ass open carry with like fucking AKs and AR-15s, like walking through Walmarts the next day, like with the weapon. Like, why would you do that to people, man?
Right.
Like, nobody feels safe with that. Seeing somebody with an open carry doesn't make you feel safe. It makes you feel nervous.
Right.
Like, no matter where you're at, that is not comforting. If you think that that's comforting to people, you're a lunatic.
Right.
You are an absolute... If you're the type of person who goes strong slide sling arms in a fucking Walmart, you're a lunatic.
I will say one, you know, look for the classic line that always comes out now, Mr. Rogers, look for the helpers, that they needed blood for El Paso, and the line went around the block. Like, there was that, like, hundreds and hundreds of people showed up to donate blood. And then also the story of PFC Glendon Oakley has been making the rounds. He was in a section of the mall next to the Walmart when shooting started, and he just said, you know those play areas in the mall?
Mm.
So shooting started, people started running, and all these kids were just stuck in the middle of this play area, and he just started grabbing them, and he was carrying them out. He said he got about, and other people corroborated, he got about 13 children out into a safe area, and he said, I was just focused on the kids. I wasn't worried about myself, so I just put my head down and ran as fast as I could. They were anxious when they were in my arms. They were trying to jump out of my arms, but I was keeping them in as tight as possible. They're kids, so they didn't know what was going on. And once he saw the police, he said he let the kids go and pulled out his phone in case the police were going to shoot me. So I started recording while I was running. He knew running out, like, whatever, looking all crazy, holding all these kids. And he knew there was a chance he could maybe be shot. And he just did it anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of people like that selflessly putting themselves on the line. And, I'm sure there was a lot of soldiers there. Fort Bliss, back to school shopping.
Yeah. I think crazy. There's mostly good people in this country, in this world. And we just got to eradicate or attempt to eradicate all these people, all this evil, all this negativity. And that's not possible to eradicate evil. But hopefully the people who are mostly good can outnumber by such a great number that all this evil in this world kind of comes to hopefully comes to an end.
Yep, we have to target white supremacy with the same ferocity that we do radical Islamic terrorism. Like, we have to view it the same exact way.
Yep.
Both are very dangerous.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I don't think people are comfortable, or a lot of people aren't comfortable saying, hey, we have terrorists that live in this country.
Yeah.
Well, no, this is terrorism. By definition, this is terrorism. So just
that manifesto is the definition of terrorism.
Right.
Quit lying to yourselves and saying, like, oh, this is the greatest country. Yeah, it is the greatest country, but it's very clear that we got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
So we can't just keep lying to ourselves with our head in the clouds saying that we shouldn't do anything about it. And like, oh, this, if you don't like it, leave it. Like, no, that's a terrible attitude to take.
But my God, my heart just breaks for everybody involved in shootings this weekend and in every city across the country. And it just, yeah. Hmm.
Yep.
Crummy topic to discuss.
Yeah.
But it has to be discussed.
Yep.
Any other final notes for the show that you guys want to mention?
No, I don't think so.
You mentioned Polynesian culture, and it made me think back last week. I went on a date with John Fites to see the new Hobbs and Shaw movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they really showcased the Samoan culture in that, and then their fighting spirit. So I just thought that was pretty cool. And then it made me think, we have a coach on our staff up at West Point, our tight ends coach, Coach Saturnino. Before the game, he does like a haka type stuff, and I have no idea what that dude is saying.
Yeah.
But it fires me up.
That it really
does. Dude, haka is like the most motivating shit in the world.
It gets your heart
beating. He like gets everybody together and like says stuff to him, and then turns and looks at the other team and starts saying all this stuff, and then like does the thing where he sticks his tongue out and screams. Ah, man, it's awesome.
It is cool shit.
He's a good guy.
It's no French Marines singing beautifully, but I mean, no, nothing on my end. Just going to go eat some peanut butter Oreos.
One thing that I wanted to mention is that this week on ZBT, there was somebody, graduated from the University of Auburn by using his GI Bill and things like that.
Hell yeah.
And the ZBT account had quote tweeted and said, give him one. I miss give him one. Whenever people would say that, I used to hate it when it was in, but you could just say the most ridiculous shit. Give him one, kill, slide bodies, blah, blah, blah. You could say whatever you want, and it was just like the most motivating shit. I think we should start doing that on ZBT more often. If a veteran is doing something good, we'll quote tweet it, give him one, and then everybody just say your favorite motivational phrase underneath it. I would like that to be a thing.
I think that's awesome.
All right.
That's interesting how things can bother you while you're in, but then when you get out, you really enjoy them. Kind of like when I run with Cadence now. Sometimes it's like, all right.
Oh, my God.
Like
all right. Well, let's give this episode one. Yeah.
All right. See ya. It's on the retreat. Forgot what I was supposed to say.